Frozen.
In brightest day.
In blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, to hear the lamentation of the women.
Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your mystic eye of Agamotto,
seeing all the world of comic books.
Right on. Chris, I like Agamotto on the rocks.
It's always delicious on the rocks, yeah, although sometimes great. I like it neat too, you know.
Do you?
Yeah, you know, once in a while.
Because you can see the world very clearly after a few Agamottos.
That's very, very, very true. Very, very true. Walter, you know, we are extremely, extremely fortunate today. We do have a very special guest with us today. We have the Joe Shuster Award winner and creator of Captain Canuck, Mr. Richard Comley, is here with us today. Richard, how are you doing today?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Great, great.
Great to have you here, Richard. Now, Richard,
happy to be here.
We're going to ask you to participate the first half of the show with us in our normal flow, which is we're going to discuss some comics that came out this week and some industry news that's is it prevalent this week? Is that the word? Is that
a
word?
Prevalent, that's a word.
Is it? News.
New news. Right. All right. Yeah, Richard, please, if you want to add in anything at any time, more than welcome to. And then we'll get to an actual discussion with you and what's going on with Captain Canuck these days later on.
Okay. Excellent. All right. So, Richard's got me off my flow here.
Well,
what's next?
Well, we have new this week, and actually Richard is going to give the announcement for the new this week today.
All right. He's
going to
read our sponsor.
That's right. Yes.
New this week is brought to you by Unstable Molecules. Whether flaming on or stretching to the max, you will be able to fight crime in style while wearing Unstable Molecules.
Well done.
I love it. I love it. Thank you very much, Richard. Good. That was fantastic. Very good.
All right. New this week. We're going to talk about at your local comic book shop today. Flashpoint number one hits the stand.
Yes, and of course this is the big DC crossover event for the summer. Man, you know, I have a list here in front of me of all the different Flashpoint crossover books, and there's got to be like at least 20 here on there.
Yeah, I thought it was 200-300, but you're right. Maybe
it is 20. Could be 200-300. It may as well be. I mean, you know, we've got Flashpoint, just to name a few. Flashpoint Abin Sur, the Green Lantern number one. Flashpoint Emperor Aquaman. Flashpoint Citizen Cold. Flashpoint Wonder Woman and the Furies. Flashpoint Lois Lane and the Resistance. Flashpoint Green Arrow Industries. Like, it just goes on and on and on.
DC is going all out for this Flashpoint event.
Yes.
Now, as much as I tried, Chris, for the show, I know Richard was going to be here, and I wanted to, like, you know, show him how hip and smart I was with the comics. I had a guy explain to me, a DC fanboy last week, explain to me everything that Flashpoint was and what it's supposed to do, and I've totally forgotten everything.
Oh, well, okay, well, hold on. Before we even get involved in all that, now I have to ask Richard this. Now, Richard, one of the trends these days in comics is, of course, these multi-crossover events, and, like, how do you follow any of this at all, or do you like it at all, or...
I got to be honest with you. I don't follow it. I don't get into comic book stores all that often.
Right.
And when I go in, I just kind of look for I look for art. I look for names. You know, there's friends of mine who still work in the industry, and I look to see if any of their names are on anything. And I look to see if there's some new titles. And I look at the old standbys like Batman and Superman and sort of see what's happening. But I really don't pay attention to
Oh, the mega crossovers.
Events. No, I have no idea what's going on.
That's okay. You're not alone. I don't really pay attention. There's certainly, I shouldn't say I don't, but I pay attention a little bit. But certainly Walt doesn't either. But that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay. We're here to convert you, to bring you over to what's new, in comic books, Richard, and bring you back into the fold.
That's right. You got to bring you back in.
Bring you back in.
That's right.
So Flashpoint number one, hitting the stands at your local comic shop today.
Yeah.
Big event, people. Especially you DC fanboys. So go in, check it out, and hopefully, I guess, if you really like it, you'll buy the 78 other crossovers. All right, over on Marvel. I thought this was cool. I wanted to talk about it. So Spider-Man Hobgoblin Lives trade paperback.
Yes. Now, hold on a second. Oh, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
Okay. The problem that I have initially with this trade paperback is that, it's a $20 trade paperback. It was a 4-issue miniseries when it came out, I believe.
Three.
Right. And you can probably find these three comics in, the dollar bin somewhere.
Right. But the collection collects Spider-Man Hobgoblin Lives 1-3 and Peter Parker Spectacular Spider-Man 259-261, which is 6 issues. But it brings the point – you're hitting a good point here. So – these 6 issues are what? These are 90s, roughly?
Yeah.
They're available in your dollar bins.
Or perhaps $2 bins.
Right.
So you're looking at, 6 issues here. So
you can pick up for 10 bucks, 8 10, bucks.
10, well, 6 times 2, if they were $2 each, would be 12. But that's okay.
You're very good.
I know math wasn't my strong point, but, it's...
apparently neither mine.
But you know what? You probably would get them on sale because I'm sure the comic book store would be more than willing to almost give them away.
All right, so it's like you bring in these 6 up and you go, hey, bud, I know they're $2 each, but would you take 2 for all of them?
Yeah, and he'd probably say,
oh, yeah, no
absolutely,
problem.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I can feed my family today.
Right.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, though. At our comic shop, these old collections of 80s comics and 90s comics sell all day.
Really?
So and you're paying $3.33 per each issue,
yeah.
Right? Because it's a compilation of 6 issues.
Yeah.
And check that math out, right?
Yeah.
So $3.33.
That's pretty good.
But yet people are willing to pay that because it's not about reading the story. It's
right.
About they're all here.
The package.
Yeah,
that's
package.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Why do I got to go in some dingy guy's basement?
It's all about the package, Walt.
Right. Okay. Glad you're here, Richard. Welcome to the show.
No, but you guys are absolutely right. I mean, you know what? It's on the shelf. It's sort of a spur of the moment purchase. You don't have to go rummaging through dollar bins to try to find all the issues. If you find, 5 of the 6, now all of a sudden you're out of luck. You get them all at
you're
once.
You're Saul.
Yeah. For the extra few dollars you're going to save, it's a neat, convenient package that you can get all at one time.
Can I ask this question?
Go ahead.
Is the graphic novel maybe becoming a popular mode?
Yes.
I mean, maybe they like this package.
Yes.
It's neat. It's a little tidier.
Yes.
It's
people do like the package.
Yes, it's
on
the book.
Grab it off the shelf.
That's right.
Without having to dig it out of the box.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You don't have to.
I'm just asking. I don't. I'm serious here.
You're absolutely right. The industry is moving toward the graphic novel trade paperback format, and it's the convenience of it. And like we said before, we don't have to go to cons and go through a guy's dollar bins. You don't have to go in a basement of a store and look through their junk stuff.
And you know what? You get to put it on your shelf. You don't have to hide it away in some sort of comic book long box. You put it on your shelf. You can go and look at it again anytime you want. Whereas, like most collectors who have been collecting comics for a long time, you may have, a couple thousand comics that you're like, okay, I don't know if I want to read that story again. I'm going to have to go searching for it,
Right.
I mean,
right.
And a couple thousand comics it sounds like a lot, but for the average collector, it really isn't.
Yeah, that's year one.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Chris, we got a busy show, so let's end New This Week there. Please head into your local comic shop and support New This Week and peruse the New This Week show.
Peruse. I love it when you say words like peruse. That is fantastic. Is it time for a musical interlude?
Of course it is.
All right, well, let's have a little bit of the old Spider-Man Aerosmith here.
We'll be right back.
Singing Spider-Man. Love it.
Yeah.
All right, which brings us to industry news. And this week, industry news is brought to you by Yellow Baseball Bats. Are Green Lanterns giving you crap? Show them the business end of a yellow baseball bat.
You know what? That was one of the things that I always had a bit of a problem with. You know, Green Lantern, he can do almost anything, but all of a sudden somebody in like a yellow raincoat comes around and he can't do anything.
Oh, I get it, right, because I didn't get it. When I read it, I didn't get it, but now I remember Green Lantern doesn't like yellow.
Well, it's not that he doesn't like yellow. His ring is impervious to yellow. Like, oh, he can't do anything against yellow.
Right.
But what you, which, you know, really...
Seems like a pretty lame, like a pretty large loophole, like criminal.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going up against the Lantern this week, you know.
Let's make sure we wear yellow.
We will wear yellow.
But you know what? I don't know if which is worse, the modern-day Green Lantern or the Golden Age Green Lantern, where his magic ring wasn't effective against anything made of wood. So once again, come up with a baseball bat.
Nice.
And he's, and, you know, he's got a problem there.
Wow.
And you know what? Just don't bring wood to your game.
All right. Oh, he's got a Woody. I guess you'll win.
All right, moving right along.
Where was I? All right, Chris, let's start off with, oh, this is cool news. Marvel is going, I don't know if you remember, Richard, but a couple months ago, who was it, IDW, Godzilla. If a comic shop ordered 500 copies of the book, they would get their store on the cover.
So it would be like Godzilla would be crushing store.
Big B, right?
So, but
whatever,
you had to order 500 different 500 copies in order for you to
and
have that logo.
Yeah, they'll do that little print run for you. So Marvel is doing something similar now with Amazing Spider-Man number 666, which is, I believe, the beginning of that whole Spider Island.
Something to do with, is it something to do with Satan?
No. So they have, I guess, inside somewhere they have a splash of the Daily Bugle paper.
Okay, right.
And I guess Marvel's smarter because this is cheap. I guess there's a spot in that Daily Bugle that's just a square.
Okay, right.
And so they can just transpose.
Yeah, sure.
Put your store picture.
Place, put, you know.
Remember Foster Brooks? You guys remember Foster Brooks? Hey, Foster Brooks on the Dean Martin roast, he would act like he's a guy that would come on and he'd be drunk all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd always go, and the people of Las Vegas, he would try to say, and the folks of Las Vegas, right? So it's kind of like
that's
that.
Good.
Sorry.
That's good.
Yeah, so if I guess I don't know the quantity yet. It doesn't say the quantity.
Right.
The store has to order.
Right.
But
you know what?
You get the picture on it.
This is kind of cool, but kind of lame. I mean, you know what? IDW goes ahead and does this with the cover of the comic, and Marvel's saying, well, you're going to have some sort of, you know, middle page type thing, you know, and we'll put you in sort of a flyer for the Daily Bugle.
But not so fast, Whiplash.
Ho-ho!
The back cover of these things will be a full-page Marvel-designed ad for your store.
Okay. So,
but only for those whatever that you
Marvel,
order.
So it's going to be – oh, I see.
You ordered 500.
Right.
You get your picture on the frame inside, and then on the back cover of those 500 is an ad for your store or of some sort.
Right. So the people that are buying the comic at your store get to actually have an ad for your store.
That way. That really doesn't work.
That's great. It's fantastic. Yeah.
But think about this. With technology the way it's going,
Yeah.
With small press, with this kind of
digital,
quick, digital press to order. Is this like a trend now? Will they be like smaller and smaller print runs required
probably
to do like unique runs?
For sure. Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
So I don't know, say 3 years from now, you know, Batman number 750 will have literally 400 different covers because 400 different stores will be...
That sounds like a horrible, horrible thing.
Fanboys themselves.
I got 400 different issues of Batman number one.
With me on the cover.
Wow. Yeah, that will happen. That will... Yeah. Well, you know, that reminds me of, you know, Jones Soda.
Jones Soda.
It's a pop drink, you know. They invited people to send in their own photographs and to be on the soda thing. So why wouldn't, you know, Marvel or DC do something like this, right?
It makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And then you can collect all the issues of you.
Wow. Collectors.
Wow.
Talk about the dollar bins.
Talk about the dartboard. All right.
Hey,
moving right along.
Richard, here's news for you that you'll be interested in, because I tried to cater the show around guests. A Frank Miller page that he drew for Dark Horse Returns number 3. Dark Horse. That is just brutal.
Dark Horse Returns, number 3.
The Dark Knight Returns.
You do know things about comics,
yes,
right?
Yes, I do, I swear.
Okay.
The Dark Knight Returns, number 3. Frank Miller, it was page 10. It was that page, that original art page, sold at Heritage for $448,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, it is ridiculous. Yeah.
Okay, you know...
So I wanted to ask Richard if he kept his original Captain Canuck art.
I did not.
See, don't.
I don't think I would, in my wildest dreams, ever get that much, even if I had have kept it. That's retirement money.
Yes, it is.
In my
apparently
world.
Not for Mr. Miller, though.
It's no.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Weekend binge money, maybe, but...
but, you know, this is kind of ridiculous, don't you think? Because, really, you know, it's Frank Miller. The guy's still alive.
Yes.
He's, you know, he's still a contemporary artist. He's still doing artwork. It's not like he's some guy that's been dead for 50 years or anything like that. You know, I mean, even the weird fantasy Frank Frazetta one that, you know, sold before that.
Frazetta, who is a god.
A god
in
the
he's
artist
a
world.
God.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, his sold for $380,000.
A bargain.
Like that's I can't compare the two. I mean, I realize that Frank Miller is an important factor in comics culture. However, I don't know if his art should go for $448,000.
Okay, here's my take. You can yell at me all you want. I don't like Miller's art. Like it's very kind of unique.
Yes,
and,
it
and,
is.
You know,
yeah.
Kind of. I won't say simple. Obviously, it's not simple, but there's a simplicity to it, and I don't know.
No, you're right. There is a simplicity to it. Richard, what do you think?
Well, you know, Frank Miller has a style that does seem a little more dashed off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like, but it's a little truer to the sort of the cartoony kind of. Style that maybe he imitate, you know, maybe he's imitating from. It's like Carl. What's that guy's name? Jansen. What's his name?
Yeah, Klaus Jansen. Yeah,
Klaus Jansen. It's a little closer to that. But no, Miller. You know, Miller's art is useful for the storytelling. I mean, it works well with his writing.
Yeah.
But as for standalone art, is not as pretty,
right.
So many other artists.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like you know his art and his storytelling work well together.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he could draw somebody else's story. You know, if somebody else was writing it, I don't know if it would turn out as well. Right? It might seem a little disjointed.
Yeah, it's hard to say. He'd be interpreting somebody else's, and he knows. Obviously, what he's trying to do
with his own story,
and
well, you know, all the power to him. Really,
hey, listen, all the power to him.
I didn't get $448,000 for any of my artwork.
Right?
Who bought it? Does anybody know?
No, it was an anonymous buyer. Okay. And, listen.
Somebody with a lot of money.
Yes. Obviously so. Yeah. I think he's a Frank Miller fan, too. All right, let's move it along. We have to talk about Thor.
Yes, it opened up last weekend.
Opened up on the weekend, and it pulled in $66 million, which to me would be a disappointment.
I thought it would have gotten a little bit more than that, actually. I honestly thought it would have gone around the $85, $90 million mark.
Right. Well, I'm only basing it on the big Marvel blockbusters that came before.
Well, yeah,
like Spider-Man and X-Men. I think they did better than
and
that.
And did it not make like 80-something million in Australia
right,
or something like
right,
that?
So, right,
right. You know, I mean, it is a good weekend, but, you know, it's certainly not as great as I thought it would be.
Anybody seen it?
I have not had a chance to see it yet.
I have not seen it. On Free Comic Book Day, four or five people came to me and asked me, did you see the Thor? I said, no. And they did the eye roll. And then they said, it was awesome.
Yeah, you know,
it was awesome.
I am going to see it.
I meant to see it last weekend.
Of course you did.
A couple things came up, such as Mother's Day. You know, I had a few family commitments. I couldn't.
What better thing for Mother's Day? Mom, you're going to love this movie.
Hey, Ma, guess what I got you for Mother's Day? It's a couple of tickets to go see Thor.
To see Thor. You're going to love it.
You're going to love it. It's about a guy with his giant hammer. And he's like some sort of god.
Oh, is he like a Bob Vila?
Yeah.
No, a little bit different.
That might actually excite her.
Right.
You know, yeah. And fixing up the house? Great.
No, but I don't know. I mean, we have what? We have Green Lantern coming up next. Is that the next big one, kind of?
Green Lantern's coming up, and then we've got Captain America coming up.
So I don't know. I mean, they Marvel had a lot riding on Thor. With the reviews that Thor is getting, though, I think it's going to have legs. I think people are going to keep going to see it. It's not like, oh, everybody just goes in and you know, oh, and then, oh, it was terrible. Why did I waste my money? And then it just falls off.
Yeah, you know what? I think a lot of people were probably scared to go see it this weekend because they figured everybody else would go see it this weekend. And that's, you know, that is another reason why I didn't see it.
Yep.
I figured, you know, it's going to be packed. I don't want to be shoulder to shoulder with people in the audience. I don't mind waiting a week to go see it.
Or two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For sure.
All right, guys. Let's move it along. Oh, while we can fit it in, let's quickly talk about Free Comic Book Day.
Free Comic Book Day. That was, of course, this last weekend. And Walt, you know, you have a store, and I heard that everything did fantastic here at the store. And in general, I've heard great news from a whole bunch of stores from the greater Toronto area, Golden Horseshoe area.
Yeah, we have reports in from Comic Book Addiction in Whitby. Best Free Comic Book Day ever, both in terms of gate people through the front door.
Yep.
Blue Beetle Comics in Barrie, best Free Comic Book Day ever in terms of people through the front door. Paradise Comics on Yonge Street, just north of Lawrence, Free Comic Book Day ever in terms of people. Big B Comics here in Upper James, we had our best Free Comic Book Day ever. Thanks in part to our special artist and creator that day, Richard Conley. Richard, can you give us just a bit of your thoughts on that whole day?
Well, I was impressed when I arrived about 5 to 10 to see people lined up waiting to get in the door. I was both impressed and a little concerned, but anyhow, but it was fine. The people were lovely. I enjoyed chatting with the people. I got to be in a photograph with a lovely woman bodybuilder.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah,
I took that picture.
What's this? What?
Yeah.
Oh, she had pipes. Like, she had pipes and a half.
Yeah, nice. She was strong looking and nice looking, you know.
And she is, I believe, a policeman by trade.
Oh, boy.
Yes. And she comes up to me and says, Walter, Richard wants to take a picture of me and him with him touching my biceps.
Oh,
well, she didn't say the touching my biceps.
Oh, okay.
And then she pulled she did the bicep pose, and like, God, like the peach on the end of that thing was amazing.
You know what?
She made that part up about me wanting to, but I'm fine with that.
She wanted to, right?
No, it sounds like you have to cover her in green paint and get her in as a guest appearance as She-Hulk.
As She-Hulk.
Yeah.
Fair enough, Chris. I want
to be the one who applies the paint.
I will work on that. But the great news is, and you know, people came out, and that's the important part of Free Comic Book Day, is that this year it seems, in general, I know, Richard, you went to another store after ours. You two-timed it that day, right?
Yeah.
And they were busy as well.
Yes.
Where
Image
was that?
Image Collectors, 181A Queen Street in Mississauga.
Right. And they had
They had theirs outdoors. Apparently, they've been doing theirs outdoors for a few years now. They've been there 21 years in that location. And I don't know how many. Well, they've only been doing it for 10 years, right?
Free Comic Book Day.
So,
yeah.
But I think he's been doing it for all of that. And
Right.
And doing it outdoors, I think. Most of that. So,
well, that's good. Good news. Bigger and better things for Free Comic Book Day next year, we all hope.
Absolutely.
All right. Chris.
One of the other highlights, real quick, is that I got to do a quick little drawing lesson demonstration for a few people who was a lovely young woman about 20, she said she was 20, who was really interested in learning to draw.
Right.
She was going in to be a veterinary assistant, which is sounds smart, but she also loved drawing and wanted to pursue that as well. So I was able to, you know, I guess one of the important thing is I was able to explain to her, you know, if you really are keen on this, you'll want to do it every day.
Uh-huh. Right.
Even
sure,
if it's only
sure.
a little bit. I mean, sometimes life gets in the way and you can't do it absolutely every day, but Anyways, so that was one of the highlights.
Right. You know what? I like the fact that this girl obviously sounds like she's got a head on her shoulders because, yeah, I love drawing comics, but I better become a vet to pay my bills. To pay my bills.
Yeah.
All right. Chris, you can help me with this one.
Okay.
I read this, and I know that. So here's this Marvel Universe MMO.
Yes.
And I thought it was like some fighting, you know, where you go to
yeah,
the ring.
Yeah, that's right.
But MMO
mixed,
is like
mixed martial.
Right. So obviously, it's a video game thing.
It is a video game thing. It MMO is it's actually so massively multiplayer online role playing game. There's usually an RPG after that. What Marvel is taking its cue from the DC Universe Online role playing game that came out. And clearly, they're going to try to do the same thing, but make it better, kind of.
Right. Now, Richard, do you play video games?
No, I don't know.
No.
Yeah, no. I'm too old.
You own a computer.
Yes.
Yes. Good for you.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is going to be massive. I mean, this again, once again, you'll be able to probably either, if not play the Marvel characters, probably create your own characters. And our engineer is shaking his head. Just play as the characters. Oh wow! You actually get to be Spider-Man.
That's cool.
See, yeah, that's something cool. That you know the DC universe didn't actually do,
right?
Because you had to make up your own character. But now you have to. But what does that mean? That there's going to be like you know 4,000 Wolverines going all over the place? Oh. Hold on. Our engineer is
just
telling us
yell
that.
Yell it out loud.
Apparently, they're working on stuff.
I know
stuff.
There's glass, but just yell it out loud.
They're working on the different levels and different playable.
Oh, okay.
There won't be doubles.
Oh, so there won't be any doubles of any of the characters. So that's good to know. That's very good. Thank you very much, James. That was James McIntosh, our engineer.
But the disappointing thing when I'm reading this thing won't be available until the end of 2012.
Right.
And Marvel is saying, no, don't worry, because what they want to do, I guess, is they want to have all these and this is what you and I always talk about, how comic books is pervasive now. It's
right.
And so they want to have all these movies, including Iron Man 7 and Avengers in 2000. So they want to have all that precedent so all these people, these gamers, these kids, they go see these movies, and then they want to design this MMO thing.
They want to be part of it.
To be kind of inclusive of that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's product tied into product tied into product.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be like a huge, huge thing. It's going to be one of those things where I guess people will be talking about and blogging about for the next flipping year and a half. Right.
Well, you know, one of the problems with the DC Universe Online game, I mean, you know, I can understand why they would not do it, but you can't play characters like Batman or Superman, but you can create a character that resembles Batman and call him like, you know, I don't know,
Bob.
Winged Man or something like that. Or whatever. Okay. Yeah. Bob. Yeah, exactly.
Bob.
or whatever it happens to be. But it sounds like Marvel's doing the right thing here, and they're going to make it so that you can actually play Wolverine or Spider-Man or Dazzler or, you know, Nightcrawler or Squirrel Girl.
Right. Richard, Captain Canuck the video game. We'll talk about it after the show, okay? All right. Hey, Chris. More news from New York.
New York, Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark.
Turn Off the Dark. Now, we have not got our invite yet. Let's ask Richard, have you been to New York to see Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark on Broadway?
No.
No. Okay, he hasn't. All right. well, you're one of few, apparently, because it's just selling out every week. So they've totally redesigned the thing, right, Chris?
Right.
They've taken 3 weeks and they've spun it around, and because so many people were almost dying of accidents, they've I think added more acrobatics and stuff to the
show. Right, rather than like the high. Well, I think more acrobatics, but I think a little bit less of the actual, like, you know, wire acts and stuff like that. I don't know if they're doing as much of that stuff, but there's gonna be more. They're trying to lighten it up a bit. They're gonna scale back things. They're gonna add new songs and have a bit of a lighter tone, just kind of like, you know, make things a little lighter. Even from the sounds of the title, Turn Off the Dark, it sounds like that's what they're trying to do, is trying to turn off the dark, really.
Right. And now, you know what would be great? I don't know if that very first one, like, what was it, about 7 years ago when they started this thing?
Or, I think so, yeah.
8 months ago or 6 months ago. That very first one, if somebody had that on film.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the opening night, the premiere, if they have that. I wonder if you could even recognize,
you know,
the two.
I'm sure there's got to be somebody around there that has all this stuff on YouTube or on film somewhere. And if you do, you're more than welcome to send it to Comic Book Daily and let us know.
Yes, and again, people, the producers or whoever is involved with Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, please get Chris and I some
passes.
Some passes,
you know,
tickets.
We have been plugging this
stupid, stupid play.
I say stupid, but you know what? If you're listening,
I mean,
this
is great,
this
play.
Absolutely fantastic musical for a long time now. And really, if anybody deserves passes, it's Walter and I to go to New York. You don't have to pay for a hotel or anything, but if you wanted to, you could.
Yeah, of course.
But I'm just saying you don't have to. But just getting passes would be good enough.
Right. All right, Chris. We have Richard to talk to, so let's close industry news.
All right,
today.
Well, let's close it off with a little bit of the old Hong Kong phooey.
Who is the superhero? Sarge? No. Rosemary, the telephone operator? No. Henry, the mild-mannered janitor?
Could be! Hong Kong Phooey, number one super guy. Hong Kong Phooey, quicker than the human eye. He's got style, a movie style, and a mob that just won't stop. When the going gets rough, he's super tough with the Hong Kong Phooey chop. Hong Kong Phooey, number one super guy.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
All right. Well, listen, our next segment is brought to you by Hollywood. Yes, we have no new ideas, so we'll keep making comic book movies until the genre implodes with Squirrel Girl.
Ouch!
Yes.
Hey.
Yes, as we all know, Hollywood is stealing all the best ideas from the world of comic books.
Which is a great, great, great segue.
Absolutely.
Into our honored guest, our guest of honor.
Our honored guest or
that.
Guest of honor, whatever.
I always blow it. So, Richard, again, thanks for being on the show with us today.
My pleasure.
All right, and so we're here to talk a whole bunch of things about your obviously Captain Canuck, and I don't know where to start other than the beginning.
The beginning.
The beginning.
So, that's always the best place to start in any story.
So, Richard, maybe, first of all, you could just tell us how Captain Canuck got started.
Okay, whoa.
Well, half hour left, Richard.
All right. Let's go back to 1971. It's 1971, 1972 in that area. When I met my friend Ron Leishman.
Right.
I met him at church, actually, and he was into comic books.
I drew. In fact, he had attended advertising art at community college. I actually saw him there. I didn't know him at that time. But and we used to get together, and he said to me, probably more than once, that, you know, there really should be a Canadian superhero. There should be.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, and I really wasn't, you know, I'd read comics, I liked comic books, but I wasn't a collector, I wasn't reading them regularly, any of that stuff.
Right.
But he really planted a seed when he said that, because I said, yeah, why don't we,
yeah.
You know, kind of thing. And we actually, he did some, he had some sketches. His style is very cartoony. Tunaday.com. You can see his work at tunaday.com.
Tunaday.com.
Yeah, T-O-O-N.
Yeah. Oh, Tunaday. Yeah. Not like tuna the fish.
Not T-U-N-A.
As in cartoon, yeah.
That's a diet site.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go to tunaday.com, and he has a service where you pay a fee. I think it's like a yearly fee, and you get a cartoon every day.
Oh, okay,
that
cool.
You can use it on your newsletter or your anywhere
cool.
You want.
Right.
Yeah, and it's I've seen his cartoons all over the place in this province.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
He's based in Calgary, Alberta.
Okay, cool.
And he has clients all over the world. I'm sure he does. But,
right.
And he does a cartoon every day.
Right.
I mean, he maybe does two some days, right. You know what I mean? But
whoa, that's a little crazy. No,
yeah.
Hey, that's a good day
right
there.
Yeah.
But, so, okay, he puts you on to this.
Yeah.
He says, hey, and then you started churning, in your mind started going, we need
We talked about it a lot. We really got serious about it. He came up with a costume design. We were floating two names, Captain Canada and Captain Canuck.
Right.
So, how come Captain Canuck? Like Corporal Canada, Captain Canada, Gordon Lightfoot. You could have named it anything.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, Captain Canada sounded really, really obvious. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
But there was already a few Captain Canadas out there.
Okay.
One of them had moose horns, and
really?
I'd buy that.
Yeah.
It was a little goofy, but it looked fun. Anyways, I went into a Hudson Bay store probably around 1972 or. It was probably around 1972. It might have been 73 even, but and I saw a sweatshirt with it was an old drawing of Superman, and they had removed the S and then they had put in bold type underneath Captain Canada.
Oh, really? So
that's all they did.
That far back, eh?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I saw that and I said, well, okay, scratch Captain Canada. We're not going to use that. And,
right.
And immediately we decided, well, Captain Canada, Canuck works better anyway.
For sure.
We liked the sound of it anyways. And later on we found there was some real history to Canuck.
Right.
To the name Canuck. There's some pretty interesting history to that name. Anyhow.
Interesting. Okay.
So I started working on it. I started doing some research into distribution. You know, we didn't have any story, anything at that point. And then Ron left. He actually went to Alberta, and he ended up in the north working. He was saving money to go on a mission.
Okay.
Ron Leishman and I are both Mormons. And Ron went on a mission for 2 years, and just before he left, I started rolling with it. And actually, in issue number 3, you'll see a letter from a whole page I devoted. He wrote a letter while he was serving his mission in France.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic.
And just talked about, you know, a bit about Captain Canuck. He really didn't he explained that he was away for 2 years serving a mission.
Right,
and, But so it really wasn't until I got much closer to actually doing the work. And I had to really kind of learn a little bit about comic books, too. I remember going into stores and picking them up and buying them and reading them and just getting a feel for story flow and
so
all of that.
So had you been a bit of a comic fan before that? Or
not
was
really,
this idea sort of churning in your head?
Yeah. It
put
made
you on to
me.
Comics.
Yeah,
oh, okay,
it put me on to comics.
Okay.
I remember reading Sergeant Rock, and I loved Joe Kubert's art as a 10-year-old.
Right.
And interestingly, in 2007, I took a class of Mohawk students. I taught for a year at Mohawk, a course that I helped develop called comic design. I can't remember what I called it.
Comic book scripting and design.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I took my class to his school.
Oh, very cool.
And as we were leaving, he was driving in.
Wow.
But we, you know, I had a bunch of people there, and I would have gone back and said, hey, I remember reading Sergeant Rock when I was 10 years old. You know what I mean?
He's
still alive, for heaven's sakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was good.
What are you doing? Still alive?
Yeah.
What's your problem?
Oh, my God. You're still alive?
What the heck's wrong with you?
He's probably close to 90 now.
Right. So, but back then. Oh, yeah. Right. Okay.
All of
2007,
years ago.
Yeah. All right. So
what are you doing still alive?
Let's go back. I'm sorry to digress here so much, but going back to 1974, that's when I really got serious. I started doing the art for the first issue. What we ended up doing is, because I wanted a better coloring system, I got somebody who was a bit of an expert to help me develop a better coloring system, where we use vinyl copolymer paints on acetate overlays.
Vinyl copolymer paints.
Well, I have no idea what
over
that is.
Acetate overlays.
That yes.
Sounds really complicated.
It isn't.
My feeble brain.
No. Here's what we did in the end. I mean, we tried a few different methods. In that first issue, there's a couple of different pages of experimentation, where one of them I did the black line after the color.
Wow.
And, okay. Yeah. But what we ended up with, the best method was, we did the black line art just the way it's still done today.
Right.
On paper, except then we'd put a sheet of acetate over top of that, and then we would apply the color to that acetate.
Okay.
And we used...
Right.
Vinyl copolymer is the same paint that they use for 2D cell animation.
Oh, okay.
Traditional cell animation for, you know, typical animation.
Yeah, okay.
It's, you know, of course, it's all computer nowadays.
So, that sounds like you're doing basically like color breakdowns and that kind of thing. Like you're doing...
Sort of. And what would happen is the black line was shot as a line shot. Remember, back then, the art was done... it all had to be shot in front of a big stat camera.
Right.
There was no scanning or digital back then. It's long before then.
I'm sure it probably would have made it a little easier if they did have computers back then for you.
Well, it would have been.
Everything I don't have to worry about all that stuff anymore. Yeah.
Anyhow. okay.
All right. So...
let's move on.
Yeah, okay.
No. You're developing new techniques.
Yeah.
So quickly, just tell us about, okay.
I finally got it done.
Canuck went to print.
Yeah, I printed 200,000
copies.
800? No, I printed 200,000 copies.
200,000 copies.
Yeah. Hold on. Whoa. 200,000, not 200. Not 2,000, not 200, 200,000.
Yeah.
In your
basement.
That's
crazy.
No.
You didn't print them yourself. Like, you didn't like come out with
a... No, they were printed by a big printing company there in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Great people. We 110,000 of those went out immediately through the mass market distribution system.
Okay.
You got to remember, at that time, 1975, there were maybe a dozen comic book stores in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
There was one in Winnipeg.
Right.
I don't know if there was one in
Kitchener.
What, in 75?
Oh, yeah. Harry at Now and Then was around in about 71, 72.
Okay.
Right.
All right. And then there was... There were...
One in Toronto.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And I know there's a few maybe in San Francisco, places like that.
So these all went out to, like, Zellers's
back in 1975, every drugstore, every convenience store had spinners.
Right.
And that's where everybody bought their comic books back then.
No, spinners are those spinner racks where you would actually put the comics on. You'd spin them around and see which ones you want.
Or it would be on a shelf.
Yeah, right. No such thing as a near mint comic off a spinner.
No.
Because they would all be bent in the middle.
Okay, so they go out. It becomes obviously a success. And then what happens?
Well, it did. It got a lot of attention from the media. It was unprecedented, the attention that we got. The timing was right for Captain Canuck in this country. And
so CBC picked up some of the stuff.
Oh,
right?
My goodness. I wrote a two-part radio play for CBC that was aired back in 1975.
Hold on. They did a Captain Canuck
radio play.
In
two parts. You had to tune in a week later or the next day.
We need that podcast.
We do need that, yeah.
You'd have to... Maybe the CBC archives would have it. I never kept it. I mean, never even thought to keep it.
Can we recreate part of it right now? No.
I can't remember.
With a mighty fist, Captain Canuck smashes
it. It was based, it was really just the same story that's in the first issue.
Right. So it's a half hour, 2 half-hour episodes?
No, I think they were more like 2 15-minute episodes, if I remember correctly.
That would be great. Okay. Yeah. We have to find that.
We do, absolutely. Right. We the archives. Search the CBC archives.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So now let's just flash forward a bit here. Now, Captain Canuck has never really died off. Like, I mean, there's always been some sort of incarnation over the past few years. Most recently, IDW has taken these taken your creation and put them into trade paperbacks. Now, hardcovers. Yes, sorry. And now, how did that all come about? And what's going on with that?
Well, I got a call from one of the editors about 2 years ago now, and about 3 years probably, because it took almost a year just to before from the time I first spoke to him to the time that they released the first volume.
Okay.
It was 2 volumes, and they collected issues number 14. From 4 to 14, and the summer special.
Okay.
Between the 2 volumes.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, and so, it worked out real well page count wise too. Right. You know what I mean? And
so hold on, issues 4 to 14,
and
yes,
the summer special.
And the summer special.
Okay.
The summer special comes after issue number 10, and there's story continuity that needed to be considered in there too, because it was issue number 10, and then the summer special, and then 11, 12, 13. 11, 12, 13 was the big alien. The big deal with the aliens
coming
back.
Don't give it away.
Okay, now I have to ask. So issues number 1 to 3 are not in those trades?
No.
Okay, so in those hardcovers. Now, what's
the reason being is because the origin story doesn't happen till number 4 anyways.
Okay.
And it just worked out better page-wise.
Okay.
To start with 4, and I totally agreed with that, too.
Okay.
It did work better.
So now, if you want to go back and read those original issues, you have to have the original issues. You can't go...
Of 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Do you plan anything on 1, 2, 3?
They will be, eventually, they will be reprinted
in a book
form. Some sort
of supplementary hardcover or something like that.
Oh, yeah,
right.
They will
be.
Right. If not by IDW, then somebody else.
So now, IDW, you did very well with IDW. Now,
it,
I understand
it sold
IDW
out. Yeah.
IDW has sold out of those, and I must add that they're just gorgeous looking. They were very well done.
They were extremely well done. Yeah.
Well, let me quickly explain what I did is all that artwork is in Ottawa at the archives.
Oh, very nice.
Well, Gatineau actually, and
right.
And they allowed me to go in there because I sold them some of the original artwork way back in 92, and then donated all the rest.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
For tax credits,
okay.
And actually, I wish I made enough money to use those tax credits. I actually kind of sold off bartered those tax credits. Anyhow,
anyways,
I went with a scanner. They allowed me in there. I think I set a precedent by doing that. And I scanned those pages, both the color overlay and the black line. And then with the help of one of my daughters-in-law, we put it all together. We basically remastered it.
Cool.
So the color, those pages look far better in those 2 hardcovers than they did in the original printing.
Right, because they're probably on a little bit of glossier paper, not the newsprint and that kind of thing.
And the newsprint, it was printed like 85 dots per square inch back then, and now it's like 150.
Right.
Much better looking.
Right.
And we were able, George Freeman did a lot too. Excuse me for not mentioning that.
Right.
George Freeman did about half the pages, and he spent a fair bit of time improving the look more so than I did on some of those pages because, you know, he's just that kind of guy. He's pretty meticulous.
Okay, now I do have another question for you. I got to know, like, did you ever, I mean, a lot of the characters that came out in the 70s and in the 80s, they all had sidekicks. Did you ever plan on having a Captain Canuck sidekick or like a Ward, like, you know, any kind of Robin or, you know, Speedy or something like that?
No, we didn't have no sidekicks.
I know you didn't have, but did you ever consider something like that?
No.
Little Timbit.
Little Timbit or little Maple or something like that. You know?
Tim Hortons wasn't as big back then.
Right.
You know
what
I mean? Well, maybe they weren't even around.
No, I'm sure 75. They were. Yeah, they were.
75?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Were they?
Of course.
Okay. Anyhow. No, he had associates. I mean, Redcoat and Quebec were agents that worked with him in the original series.
Black Jacques Chalac would have been perfect. Oh, I'm sorry. That's some different.
That's Warner Brothers.
We digress.
Yeah, I digress. Okay. So, that culminated obviously and it ended in very well. Now I'm going to jump forward a little bit because
not really.
Obviously we're it didn't.
What do you mean? What went in very well?
Like the IDW experience.
Oh, yeah, that did. Yeah.
It ended very well.
Yeah, that did.
During that period, that's when you received your kind of Hall of Fame Lifetime Achievement Award from the Joe Shuster Committee, too.
Yeah, last year.
Last year. Now, you and George and
Jean-Claude Saint-Aubin.
Right.
Well, actually, it just goes by Claude now. Claude Saint-Aubin.
Right. Okay, Claude. Now, did that what did the award, was it like a, okay, this is like a, yeah, I've done work, this is my this is for my body of work, did that how did you receive the award, what did the award mean to you?
I went to the award presentation and I stood up and they handed it to me and I shook the hand and I said a few words and I received it,
but it didn't mean anything.
Oh, of course it did.
Right.
I mean, What was neat about it was Ron Kasman actually presented the award to me, and I've known him since 1975.
Right.
He actually came to Winnipeg and he phones me out of the blue. I'm on my way to church. He phones me up and he just told me who he was, and he was a bit of a fan, and so I had him stay with me for 3 days.
Yeah,
the perfect stranger.
I've talked to Ron a couple times about that, and apparently it was just sort of like, hey, I like comic books. You're I like Captain Canuck.
I need a place to stay.
He actually didn't say that. I just I knew he was hitchhiking, and
I think that's fantastic. I would imagine that was probably back in a time when you could probably do something like that. I can't imagine somebody calling you up today and saying, hey, happen to be in the area, can I stay at your house for a few days?
Honey, call the cops.
Yeah.
Right. No, I don't know. Under the right circumstances, I don't know. I don't know what it was. But, Ron Kasman, I don't think anybody would turn him away, though.
Right. Okay, right. Fair enough.
All right, Richard, let's fast forward everything. We're running, our hour is being eaten up so quickly. Let's fast forward and tell me about what's in the future for Captain Canuck. I know you have a few projects developing for Captain Canuck, and we'd like you to share with us.
Well, let me start with the smaller projects, and there will be some reprints of issues number 15, for example. Issue number 15 and Reborn number 3 are going to be reissued in a little bit of a different format. That's in the plans. Now, the big news, and let's just jump right to the big, bigger stuff here. I have signed an agreement with a yet unnamed production company.
Okay.
And it's a Canadian company, and they've been around a long time. They're a good company, and they've done quite a few movies and TV series.
So you just can't say who it is.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why, is they've asked me not to, because they want to announce it at Comic-Con, and they want to make a big deal out of it.
Comic-Con,
you
know what I mean? In San Diego.
Yeah, in July.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but you're allowed to talk about it now a little bit.
Well, I could, they just want me to hold back some of the information, because, they want to be able to make a bigger deal,
Richard,
out of the
don't hold back. Just okay. Let it all.
You know what?
Let it go.
I'm sure there's the
Chris,
you know,
Portman of the drink.
I'm a Mormon. Remember?
Oh, no, he doesn't drink. Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. But no, they're a great company. I feel great about dealing with them. Interestingly, I've got other people involved. I've actually got two other companies lined up. You know, they're basically saying to me, if something goes wrong with this deal, We're right
oh,
behind.
So hold on. The deal, though, is obviously, you haven't said it, so I'll say it for you. The deal, obviously, is the production of a Captain Canuck movie.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, and the budget, somewhere north of $15 million.
Right.
It could be $20
million. Right.
I don't think it'll be quite $25 million, but it's going to be in that realm, apparently, around
the
$20 million mark.
Chicken,
No, well, you know what? No. I mean,
for Canada, that's pretty big.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money in Canada.
No matter how you slice it.
Yep.
I mean, it's not $150 million like it would take for a Thor movie or something like that.
Right.
But you know what?
But then he wouldn't have to make $150 million the first weekend to break even.
Exactly.
Right?
You know, and there are a lot of great movies that have been made for a lot less money than $20 million.
Right.
So
right.
You know what? I think that you can do a lot with that kind of money.
So that's very exciting.
So, it is.
So, Comic-Con, hopefully, this production company will announce the plans to produce a Captain Canuck. This is a
live-action feature film.
Yeah. Right. And so, what's your involvement? Are you going to write? Are you going to star in it? Are you going to be like Captain Canuck's dad or something? Or,
wow, I like that. Yeah, cool.
There will be some small part in there for me, just for the sake of having me in.
Like the Stan Lee. You're going to be the Stan Lee.
I want to
security guard.
Yeah, whatever. You know, something like that. I will be involved in the writing. I might not actually write the script. That's still being debated. Their plan is to invite about five. They've got on tap a lot of top writers in this country, right. And they're going to pick their five best, and they're going to say, give us a treatment. How would you handle this movie?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I've said to them, I'm happy to, you know, to go along with that, and I'll be right in there. Picking the best one of the five.
Right,
And one of those might be mine. One of those treatments might be mine.
Right. So you're going to submit a treatment yourself?
Yeah.
Script? Oh, that's like a
treatment.
A treatment.
Basically, it might be
Chris
as...
has had a few of those.
Yeah.
For that thing, you know. Right. We can't talk about that on air.
A treatment is basically, a synopsis,
right.
An outline,
kind of
more or
yeah.
less. Yeah, and just basically giving you, it might only be 2 pages, it might be 20 pages.
Right, okay.
Right.
But basically it's the story, in more or less in prose form. Right. And so...
Well, that's very exciting.
Yeah, but even if I, you know, if we pick somebody else to do the writing... I might end up writing the first draft and then somebody else do a second draft. There's lot of different possibilities.
They may take some of your ideas and say, hey, you know what, we really like this part. We're going to give it to our other writer here who knows a little bit more about movie storytelling.
Yeah.
And then we'll take it from there.
Yes, and the animated series. Thank you for mentioning that or reminding me. I have also signed a memorandum of understanding with a group out of Toronto.
A memorandum of understanding.
Yes.
I'd like to understand that.
This is the first memorandum of understanding I've actually ever signed.
And hopefully the last.
Yeah.
And so this is for an animated series now.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
And they're going to do
Captain Canuck.
Yes, Captain Canuck animated series. And this is another group that have some great ideas. They want to use the original Tom Evans, but put a different spin on the story, use his brother in a different, more creative way than we did in the original series.
Right.
They've got some great ideas. They're going to use some of the characters in interesting ways that I never considered.
This is fantastic. So, you know, I don't mean to cut you off here, but you know what? I can't imagine what you're feeling after so many years with this character, the ups and downs, the highs and lows, and now all of a sudden, there's all this resurgence of interest in this character for you. How are you feeling after all this?
Well, as you get older, you do get a little more realistic about things. So I'm also aware that, who knows, all of a sudden, 2 months from now, superhero movies aren't as popular as they suddenly are.
It's not going to happen.
I know. Well, and that's good. That's very good. And I don't want that to happen. I want to see this happen, and I am excited. But the good thing about the deal I have with the production company for the feature film is that I'm going to be one of the producers.
Well, that's so excellent.
So
that's
it's a co-production deal.
You'll have scripting. You'll have casting.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'll have a say in all of that.
If you need a couple of bumbling extras in the background somewhere, keep us in mind.
We're full of ideas. Like Jill Gerard is the dad.
Yeah, there you go.
All kinds of stuff. But that's great. That gives you, I guess, what you want, too.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of control.
Yeah, for a little bit of control in there. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, I can't imagine the kind of feeling that you're having after, so many years, as I said, of the ups and downs, the highs and lows. And now this is coming to fruition. But you know what? Sadly, we are running out of time.
Sadly.
Richard, many, many thanks for coming and taking some time out of your busy schedule to be on our show with us again. I hope you had a good time with us tonight.
Absolutely.
Good.
Thanks, Richard. And Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Scroll down to the bottom somewhere where there's a field where you can add your comments.
So go out and support your local comic book store. And when the Captain Canuck movie comes out, go out and support that too. Go out and maybe invest in some of those old stamps that came out with years ago in comic book.
1995.
There you go, 1995 stamps. All right. Thanks a lot for listening, and have yourself a great day.
Have a great day. Thanks, Richard.